We're holding on Nuntes Omid Bey's the 10th line of the wide lines, I should say. 10, yeah. Okay, we started learning yesterday that Odomodition was not allowed to eat meat. Now, we talked about Tosfos learns that it means he wasn't allowed to kill animals for meat, but if an animal died naturally, he would be able to eat it. The Yad Ramah disagrees with that and says no, it means Hashem gave him permission to eat certain things, but Hashem did not mention meat, so therefore it's not like Hashem said explicitly, you may not eat meat, but on the other hand, since Hashem didn't give him permission to, then he's not allowed to because he could only eat what he was given permission to. So we said that that Odomonition was not allowed to eat meat. Only when Noach came along, then they were allowed to. But even then, they have the issue of Eivim and Achai. However, we said that Eivim and Achai does not apply to Shratzim because we said in Halacha for us, there's a difference between the blood and the flesh of Shratzim, and therefore the way the Pasuk phrases it implies that there's a that distinction holds by Bnei Noach in a different way, namely that they're allowed to eat Eivim and Achai of Shratzim, but not of regular land animals. So the Gemara says, basically, I have a contradiction. So you're telling me that Adam was not allowed to eat animals, but the Pasuk says, Urduvid gas hayom. The Pasuk says, you will dominate over the fish of the sea. Now, my lav la'achila, doesn't that mean that no, that Adam is allowed to eat fish? Obviously, the Yad Ramah points out the Gemara is obviously assuming that the fact that we're saying that meat was off limits to him would also include fish. It would include any kind of flesh. So then, in that case, if Hashem tells him that he has domination over the creatures of the sea, that means he's allowed to eat them. The answer is lo, the malacha. No, it means that Adam is allowed to use them for work. Question is, v'dogen b'nei malacha ninu. How do you use fish for work? And the answer is ain. And as a matter of fact, yes, kid rachva. As we find what rachva asks on the subject, deboi rachva hinhig v'isav shibuta mai. Rachva asks like this: we know we have an isur for Jews of one of the isurim of kilai behema. Is that you're not allowed? We're not allowed to have two different types of animals do work together, pulling a plow or a wagon or anything like that. So now Rachva asks the question. Now we know that applies across land animals, and we know that it also applies to two different water animals. What about if you have one land animal and one water animal, and you hitch them up, let's say, together to a wagon or a boat, and you have them pull it together? So he uses the question in Iza, which is a goat, and Shibuta, which is a type of fish. Elsewhere, the Gemara says that the Shibuta is similar to a goat in that it has protrusions from its head that are sort of like horns, so therefore he puts them together. But the point is, in other words, hypothetically, if a person were to do that, now the point is that unlike with two land animals, where conceivably it would be possible to crossbreed them together, and therefore the Torah is telling you to go the extra degree away from that, not even to hitch them up together to a wagon or whatever. And the same thing with two water animals. Here, the goat is never going to go into the water, and the shibuta is not going to come up on land. So, would there be that issue, or would we still say that it's also? So we see, in other words, it is possible to do work with a fish. You could conceivably hitch up ropes to a, you could conceivably tie ropes to a fish and have it pull a boat or something. Okay. So the point is, so therefore, yes, when Hashem tells Adam that you will dominate over the creatures of the sea, he may mean that you can use them for work, not necessarily that you can eat them. All right, the Gemara says, Toshma over Oif HaShamayim. Hashem continues and tells him that you can also use the birds of the heavens for work. My lav la'achila, that you can use them. Again, my lav la'achila. On the face of it, that means that you can eat them. And the answer is, Loi l'malacha. Again, it would mean that you could do malacha with them. Well, the question is, Oifas b'nei malacha ninu. How do you do work with birds? Now, of course, you have, for example, I mean, you can use like you can use homing pigeons to deliver messages. You can have them lay eggs or whatever. Evidently, the Gemara is looking for like a type of malacha that would involve redu, like you're using them for hard labor. Like, so what would there be? And the answer is ain. K'deboi Rava Bar Rav Huna, as we find that Rava Bar Rav Huna asks the question. We learned in Bava Metzia all about the dinim that you're not allowed to muzzle an animal while it's threshing the grain or while it's doing other kinds of work for you involving food items. You have to allow it to eat on the job. So now what happens? Now we have an opinion of Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda in Bava Metzia over there that says that he says that just like with an animal, now when an ox, for example, when it's threshing grain, is using all four of its extremities. It's using its front legs and its hind legs. The same way Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda says that they have similarly in the Pasuk, it says that a human worker can eat on the job, as we touched on the other day in the Gemara. So Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda says only if he's working both with his hands and his feet. Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda would say that if, for example, he's only working with his hands, then he's not entitled to eat on the job, because then he's not similar in that regard to a shur. So Rabbi Bar Rav Huna asks, Dosh ba'abzin v'tan ha'golim, l'Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda mai? What about, according to Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, if a person uses geese or or chickens to thresh his grain, where they're not using their wings for the work, they're only using their feet. So according to Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, would we say the same thing, you don't have to allow the goose or the chicken to eat on the job because it's not using all four of its extremities? Or maybe you would say that it, in all cases, it would have to be with whatever limbs that it would usually do work with is what it would be. So a person is usually working with both their hands and feet. Therefore, Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda would say it has to be all of them. And a shur uses all four, as opposed to a bird, to begin with, uses only two. So maybe that's considered the normal thing. Maybe because that's the normal thing for it, maybe you wouldn't be allowed to muzzle it, and you would have to allow it to work on the job. The point is, Rabbi Bar Rav Huna asks that question, Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda Mai, what would be the din? According to Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, the point is that we see that it is possible to harness birds like geese or chickens to do that kind of work for you. So therefore, again, Hashem may have meant to Adam that you can do that kind of thing. You can have them do your farm work for you, not necessarily as Hashem saying that he can eat their meat. All right, the Gemara says Toshma. Well, let's continue. Hashem also tells Adam that you will dominate over Chochaya Hore Meses Ala Oretz, all the wild animals that crawl on the ground. Now, wild animals in and of themselves, of course, you could do work with. But here we're talking about the ones that crawl on the ground. So we're talking about things like snakes and worms and insects and things like that. So how would you do work with those? Wouldn't it mean that Adam is allowed to eat them? And the answer is no. That pasuk is telling us that Hashem is telling Adam that you will have the ability to have the nachash do work for you. Now, later on, the nachash lost his legs. But to begin with, D'tanya, Reb Shimon ben Menasya Omer, Chaval al Shamash Gadol she'oved min ha'olam. What a pity about the great servant that was lost from the world. Before the nachash, before Hashem cut off the nachash's feet as a result of the Chetetz Hadas, he had feet, and he would have been. And after all, he's a sapient animal. He's able to speak. He has intelligence, unlike all the other animals. Yeah, the pasuk says v'anachash orum mikochay asasada. It was more shrewd and cunning than all the other animals. So unlike all the other ones, which had no das, the snake had das and was even able to speak. So now, if it hadn't been for the chetetz das, he would have been a very useful servant to mankind. If he hadn't been cursed and lost his legs and his ability to speak, then every single Jew would be available to him two good snakes. Why we're saying every Jew is bepashtos, because what we mean is, I mean, the various svarim point out, I think the Kuzari in particular points out, before, up until Matan Torah, you had there were individual people in each generation who were great and whose Hashem's Shechina rested on them, and they were like the one heart of the world at that time. Adam, and then Shase, and then Enosh, and so forth. Later on, Avraham, then Yitzchak, then Yaakov, until finally you have an entire nation that's ready to receive Hashem's word, and to keep his mitzvahs. So if it hadn't been for the Chetetz Hadas, then we would say there would still be a Jewish people. It wouldn't necessarily be that it wouldn't necessarily be that it's only part of humanity. It might well have been all of humanity would have been in that way. But whatever, the point is that every person who is of that nation of Yisrael, of that group of people who are attuned to what Hashem wants and who Hashem gave them as mitzvahs, so everyone would have two good snakes. Why two? Marashah says, because we often find that a person, an important person, is supposed to be attended by two attendants. So here, his two attendants would be two snakes. He would send one to the north and the other to the south. He would be able to send each of his snakes in a different direction, north and south, respectively, to get for him good sandalbonim, which are a type of precious stone, and other kinds of precious stones and pearls. Marsha points out why we're saying Davka north and south, because if it's east and west, the person himself could go there as well. They're just different countries in the world. But the extreme north and the extreme south, people can't go there. It's too cold or too hot, as the case may be. So therefore, instead, he'd send his snakes for that purpose. Not only that, he would also be able to, when the snakes are home with him, he would be able to But he would be able to put a strap under the snake's tail, because again, it has legs, so therefore there's space under its tail to tie on a strap over there. Umotziba offer, and then he could have the snake collect dust and there like they he would tie, for example, a bag or a wagon or something to this strap, and have the snake be able to bring a pile of dirt. The ginoseo, he would bring it to his garden for fertilizer or for his ruined building that he's going to use it to reconstruct. And the point is, in other words, he would have, instead of a person himself having to take a wheelbarrow or whatever full of dirt, he would be able to have his snakes do that for him. So, what a pity there was a chet tadas, and the snake misbehaved, and therefore the result is that he got his legs chopped off. The point is that we see that it was certainly possible before that to do to have for a person to use snakes to do what he wants, to do his jobs for him, and therefore Hashem is telling Adam to begin with that he has the right to do that. But again, not necessarily that he has the right to eat them. The point is also there's kind of midah keneged midah over here, because the snake misbehaved and didn't, and instead misled Adam to eat and Chava to eat from the Eitz HaDaas, the result is instead of bringing dust, instead of bringing dirt for a person's needs, instead of offer toichal, the snake himself eats dirt. So fine, so no proof from that pasuk that Adam would be allowed to eat animals or birds or snakes or anything like that. All of them, it means that he's allowed to use them for his work, that he's allowed to have them do his farm work and other kinds of work for him, but not to eat them. All right, the Gemara says, Meisvi, I have another contradiction. Hoyer of Yehudim and Tema Omer, Adam HaRishon, Meisiv b'Gan Eden Hoyer, before the Chet Eitz HaDaas, Adam HaRishon was reclining in Gan Eden, like a person would recline a banquet. The Malachi Asharis were roasting meat for him, so you see he's eating meat, and they're straining wine for him, so like they're serving him at like servants, like waiters would do by a banquet. Hits it by Nachash. The Nachash gave a look at what Adam is doing. He saw the honor, he saw the honor and the glory that Adam is enjoying there in Gan Eden. And he was jealous of him, and that's what led him to tempt Chava and then Adam into eating from the Eitz HaDaas. So the point is, we see from this statement that Adam was eating meat. The Malachim are serving him meat. The answer is they were talking about meat that falls down from Shemayim. So that kind he would be allowed to eat, but earthbound meat he would not. So the Gemara asks, have you ever heard of such a thing, meat that falls down from heaven? And the answer is ain. As a matter of fact, yes. One time Reb Shimon ben Chalafta was traveling on the road. He met up with two lions who were roaring at him, and he was afraid they might eat him. Now, okay, fine, he's a tzaddik, they might not eat him, but still, he might be in danger. He might be in danger. So Omar, he says, here you have the pasuk. The young lions are roaring for their food. They're asking Hashem for their food. But Marsha points out, mainly he was thinking of the end of the pasuk, olavakish mekel ochlam, to ask their food from Hashem. So in other words, let me ask on their behalf that you should provide them their food and that I shouldn't be their food. Noch nechisulei tauti atmosa. Two thighs of an animal fell down for him from heaven. Chada achlua, so one of them the lions ate, v'chada shavkua, and the other one they left alone. So now he has a big piece of meat that's available. What's he going to do with it? I say for also the Beis Medrash, he took the piece of meat and came to the Beis Medrash. Boy Allah, he asked about it. Dover Tama, he was there. Dover Tar, is this non-kosher meat, and therefore I can't eat it, or is it kosher, and I myself can eat it? Omruloy, and they answered him, "Ain Dover Tama Yod Meshamayim." What we just said, nothing Tama ever comes down from heaven, and therefore you can be sure that this is kosher meat, and therefore you can eat it. Now, the Meiri does point out, now we're not talking about, let's say, for example, every so often you'll have like hurricanes or tornadoes or whatever may grab small creatures or whatever and whirl them around, and then eventually they fall down and they're clearly non-kosher creatures. You have like worms and then reptiles and things like that. We're not talking about that. Those are not included in the rule Ein Dover Tameh Yored Meshamayim. We're talking about something unnatural like this, where it's clearly a nest. Like here, all of a sudden, when Reb Shimon ben Chalafta needs it, then all of a sudden these two pieces of meat drop down from Shemayim. So then then we can be sure they're telling him that they're a dover to her. Well, the Gemara asks, so the same thing. In other words, Adam was being fed meat that fell down from Shemayim, not meat from earthbound animals. Well, the Gemara asks, so now Rab Zera asks Rabohu, is this always the case? What would happen if something shaped like a, if something in the shape of a donkey fell down from Shemayim? Would we consider that kosher as well? After all, it's in the form of a donkey. The Aruch HaNer explains the question is, would we say the reason why, now we would have to figure out, what's the underlying reason that Ein Dover Tomei Yoreh M'Shamayim? Is it because Hashem doesn't want to mislead people? They're going to see a piece of meat over there. They're not going to know whether it's kosher or not. They're going to think that it's kosher, and therefore we don't want to mislead them. So therefore Hashem will make sure that nothing Tomei falls down. Well, in that case, then, if you see that it's a donkey, it's obviously not kosher. So therefore nobody's going to think to eat it anyway. So maybe that doesn't follow the rule. Or maybe the reason is, in general, the rule is anything that comes from Shemayim is Tahor. After all, you're gonna have a din, for example. You have a din, which we'll learn eventually in Masechta Bechoras, Bes Hashem, that if, for example, a kosher animal, such as a cow, gives birth to a baby that looks like a non-kosher animal, it doesn't have split hooves, and so forth, nevertheless, it's kosher under the rule of Dover HaYotzim and Tahor Tahor. So maybe the same thing over here. So that's Reb Zeira's question. So Rav Abahu answers Reb Zera with a bit of an insult. Yorud nola, he says, you foolish yorud. Nola, Rashi explains, means foolish, and yorud is a tanin, which Rashi defines as a type of bird. It's always crying and moaning. So maybe like it's some kind of owl or some other kind of bird like that that's always making mournful sounds. So he calls him that. Why he calls him that, we'll explain in a second. He says, Ha amrile ein dover tomei yored m'shamayim. Listen, they told Rav Shimon ben Chalafta that nothing tomei ever falls from heaven. So therefore, yes, the answer is, you're wondering whether it's maybe not to mislead people or anything like that. No, it's an absolute rule that nothing tomei ever falls down from heaven. Anything that comes directly from Hashem, we have similar expressions in other places. Lo yigurcha ra, no evil comes from Hashem. Ein dover ra yored milamayla is a more general expression that's brought in Tanya and in other places. Nothing bad ever comes directly from above. The fact that negative things happen is a result of that. It's a result of things that are caused by our aveiros or other such things like that. But in and of itself, anything that comes from Shemayim is tahor. Now, why is he calling him such a nickname, you foolish tanin, you foolish yorud? So the Chavis Yor has an interesting tshuva, where he deals b'chlal with the whole question. You often find, this isn't the only one, you find in many places in Shas where the Chachamim have very harsh and mocking and whatever expressions to one another. So why are they doing that? What happened to the mitzvah? What happened to Avos Yisrael? What happened to covered for Tamid Chachamim? So he has a tshuva dealing with various ones of that. And here he explains like this. Reb Zera was always, he would fast, he would afflict himself, because he figured that's the proper way. A person will become more Kaddish that way by denying himself various pleasures of the world. Reb Abahu disagreed with that concept. He held, as the Gemara mentions, in some other places that a person who acts like that and afflicts himself and fasts where it's not necessary to is actually called a choite. So he's in effect saying to Reb Zera, look at you. You're trying to be a chassid. You're trying to fast and do all that. But really, that's a chassidus of shtus. So therefore, so he's telling him, so look, you know, here, like Rashi is saying, this bird is always moaning and groaning and making noises like that. And you're doing the same thing. You seem to always have the sadness about you and this idea of fasting. So Toto's telling him off for that, basically. This is not the derech. In Avodas Hashem, the derech is to be happy, Ivduas Hashem b'simcha, and not to be afflicting yourself. So that was a digression then.
He was not happy, or he was fasting and he was making his body
weaker. Internally, he was happy. I mean, he knew also, after all, the Pasuk says, the Pasuk says, Ivdur Hashem Basimcha, and the Pasuk says, Tachat Hashem Le'avadah Hashem Le'kecha. But at least externally, at least the way that people saw him, he seemed to be always very very sad and very serious and everything. So Rabbo was telling him off for that, and telling him by giving him this nickname, and telling him, you know, you're acting like this foolish bird that's always moaning, that's always making moaning sounds and whatever. You should put on an appearance more on the outside that you're happy to be serving Hashem and that you're not fasting excessively like this and so forth.
He was fasting, or
It
he was
was both. I mean, he was
not.
fasting, and the Chabas Yoh understands that he was also, in general, he says that maybe because he was fasting so much, therefore, not that he was ha not that he wasn't happy, but at least externally, like his face looked like pained and pinched or whatever. So therefore, Sadeh Bahu considers this that this is not the right way to be serving Hashem. Okay,
The Rebbe would agree with Rabbi
I don't
Bahu.
know. Yeah, I mean, no, the Alter Rebbe already would say that. Yeah, in fact, actually, the Chabas Yoh goes on to say, in fact, the problem is, Rabbi Bahu says, not only is this not the proper way in Avodah, but it may well be distracting you. It may well be preventing you from getting as deeply into Torah as you should. So in other words, now look at this. You're asking a question where you should have already realized the answer from that story. So therefore, obviously, Rabbi Bahu is telling him, listen to this. Look at you. You're fasting and you're afflicting yourself, and everything seems to have affected your powers to be able to learn Torah with as much energy as you should, and therefore you shouldn't be doing that. Okay, so again, this was all a bit of a digression because we mentioned that that Adam was not allowed to eat meat, and that the concept of that the issue of so according to Tosfos, then the issue of Eivim Achai was to begin with given to Adam, just that because he could eat meat from animals that died naturally. So Hashem is telling him then that you're not allowed to kill animals, and you're not allowed to kill animals for their meat, and you're not allowed to take off a piece from a living animal, but you would be allowed to from but and he wouldn't be allowed to from Shrotzim, but eventually Bnei Noach al Mutar and all of that. According to the Yad Ramah, the vote would be Hashem didn't give Adam permission to eat meat at all, but and therefore Eivim and Achai really only comes into the picture by the times of Noach. So now continuing on the topic of the mitzvahs b'nei Noach, so we learned a braisa previously on Nun Vav Amud Aleph and Amud Beis that dealt with what exactly is also to b'nei Noach. So we had the Tanakhama of that braisa listing the familiar seven, and then we had a couple of other Tanoim adding other ones. We had another one of the ones that are also over there. We had Rabbi Chanan ben Gamliel had said that they're also in blood from a chai, and we discussed that before. Rabbi Chitka had said they're also to castrate animals, and Rabbi Shimon says that they're also in kishuf. They're also in doing black magic. So my time at Rabbi Shimon. So why does Rabbi Shimon say that they're also in that as well? Dichtiv, because the pasuk says Machshefa loisachaya in this coming week's parasha. We're coming up to Parshas Mishpatim now. In Parshas Mishpatim, the pasuk Machshefa loisachaya, do not allow a person who commits witchcraft to live. This is a specific mitzvah on Beis Din to execute such a person. Which, by the way, you have there is a mitzvah saseh. Each of the four mitzvahs based in the Rambam counts as a separate mitzvah saseh. There's a mitzvah saseh to give skila to those who are supposed to get skila, sreifa to those who are supposed to get sreifa, and so forth. But in general, if Beis Din were not to do that, they're not over specifically on a lois saseh. If they, for example, if they see somebody who was mechalal Shabbos and he's brought to them and they don't judge the case and they allow him to go scot-free, they're over on a mitzvah saseh, but they're not being over on a lois. Or let's say, fine, let's say they judge them guilty, but then for whatever reason they don't end up doing the punishment, and they tell them, fine, you're free to go. They're not over on a mitzvah saseh. They're not over on a lois saseh. They're just over on a mitzvah saseh of that they failed to do skila. However, when it comes to a person who's doing kishuf, there they are actually being over on this lois saseh of machshefa lois achaya. Anyway, so the pasuk says that. Uchtiv, then the next pasuk continues, kol sheichav in behema mois yumas. Anybody who lies, who has relations with an animal, will be put to death. So Reb Shimon learns from that hekesh. Anybody who is in the category that they're not allowed to lie with an animal, which includes goyim, then they're also included in the mitzvah that they're not allowed to do witchcraft, and if they do, you're not allowed to keep them alive. So we see from that, says Reb Shimon, that goyim are also have the mitzvah of not doing kishuf. Okay. Then we said Rabbi Lazar Omer Afala Kilayim. We said Rabbi Lazar had said Bnei Noach are also in Kilayim. So we said, now for us Jews, there are five types of Kilayim that are also. There's Kilay Zroyim, to not plant two types of seeds together. Kilay Hakerem, where we're not allowed to plant seeds or vegetables or whatever in a vineyard. You have Kilay Ilan, which is to not graft a branch of one tree onto another. Kilai behema that we're not allowed to we're not allowed actually six kinds I guess Kilai behema that we're not allowed to crossbreed two types of animals. We're also, as we just talked about before, we're not allowed a separate mitzvah in that is we're not allowed to hitch two of them up to a wagon or a plow or what have you. And then you also have Kilai begodim, which is we're not allowed to wear shatnez. So of those two, Rabbi Lazar is saying that there are two of them of those six. Rabbi Lazar is saying there are two of them that are also to bnei noach, namely crossbreeding animals and cross grafting trees. So the Gemara says, "Minahani mili." Where does Rabbi Lazar know all that from? Now we had, according to Tana Dvei Menashe, we had before, we had a braisa before on Daf Nun Zayin that said, according to Tana Dvei Menashe, he learned it from the fact that since the pasuk makes a point that everything was created l'minehu, according to its kind, and that Adam has to take, and not Adam, not Noach has to take the animals into the teva l'minehu. So we learn from that the basic concept that they have to keep the ant, that they have to keep things l'minehu. But the question is, how do we know that also they're also in cross-grafting trees? And how do we know also that on the other hand, they are allowed to wear shatnez and do the other things? So the Gemara says, Amar Shmuel, do Amar Kra, because the Pasuk says like this, when the Pasuk is introducing the concept of Kilayim in Parashas Kedoshim, it says, it starts off, Es Hukoisai Tishmoru, you should keep my chukim. So what does that mean? Now it's like a out of the blue, what chukim? So it means chukim shechakat. Now the normal expression of the pasuk would be, it would give the mitzvah, and then it would say, keep the follow, keep these chukim that I told you before. So now instead, where it starts off, as chukos hetishmodu, implies that there are already chukim on this that you should keep. So that means he's saying chukim shechakat l'chokvar means the chukim, the rules that I already set up for you. Namely, previously you Jewish people were bnei noyach. Now, you Jews, you still have to continue keeping these mitzvahs. And the pasuk says, "Behem tocholei sadia kilayim, sod cholei sizra kilayim." So when it says you're not allowed to cross breed your animals as kilayim, and you're not allowed to plant your field as kilayim. Now, the planting over here does not mean the isurim of planting. What it means is, as the Gemara is going to explain, that it means cross grafting trees together, namely. Ma behem techa baharba. The comparison is just like animals. What's the isser is to breed them together, and what you're doing is you're creating a new species by breeding these two animals together. Afsodcha baharkova. So the same way, when you're talking about what's also in your field, doesn't mean to plant, for example, wheat and barley together. You're not creating a hybrid that way. But what it means is you're not allowed to cross graft from one tree onto another, where there you're creating a hybrid. So in other words, out of the six kinds of kelayim that we were saying before, the only ones that are also to b'nei noyach, according to Rabbi Lazar, are the ones where you're creating a new species. Tosfos actually deals with the question. The fact is, the pasuk mentions three things over there. The pasuk says, you're not allowed to crossbreed your animals. You're not allowed to plant your field as kelayim, which fine, we're saying that means cross-grafting trees. But then that same pasuk continues, you're not allowed to wear shatnez. So then why shouldn't shatnez be also, according to Rabbi Lazar, to b'nei noyach as well? So Tosfos gives a couple of answers. First of all, and part of the question is also part of Tosfos's question is also we had before. Again, we had the pasuk l'minehu that it says by when Hashem created the trees and when Hashem created the animals, it says that Hashem created them l'minehu according to their kinds. And from that itself, we should learn that you have to keep those kinds. You're not allowed to cross graft or cross breed them together. So first, Tosfos says that, listen, what it is you're right. We need both psukim, but when it comes to clothing, it doesn't say l'minehu by ma'aseh bereishis. So what it is you need what's also to them is only where it says in both places. However, we need both psukim because if we only had the psukim l'minehu in parshas bereishis, then we would say we wouldn't know that that creates an issue at all. I mean, that's describing how Hashem created things, that He created them according to their kind. On the other hand, if we only had the word as chokos hetishmodu, then we would think that it includes that it does include shatness as well. So we do actually need both psukim. What Tosfos says is the other way around. If it said as chokosai without the psukim in parashas Bereishis l'minehu, then we would say it means it's not also to b'nei noyach at all. What does it mean? As chokosai tishmoru means that Hashem told them in mora, the same way as we learned when it says by kibud av ve'em, and when it says by dinim kashetziv and Shabbos kashetzivcha Hashem alekecha, and it means Hashem commanded them a few weeks earlier in mora. So you would say the same thing over here. As chokosai tishmoru refers to that. So therefore, you need both psukim to make it clear that in fact such things are also to b'nei noyach, but again, because it doesn't say shatnez in Parshas Bereishis, it only mentions by the creation of the trees and by the creation of the animals, then therefore shatnez is not also to them, only the other two things that it says in the pasuk. Then you have uh, then 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 you have other explanations. The Yad Rama says that the point is that only the only things where you're creating some, the implication of the pasuk is only things where you're creating something new. Then those are also to Bnei Noach. Shatnez is also to us Jews, but it's not really creating something new. You're not creating a new kind of thing. You have wool and linen mixed together in the same garment. So therefore, that's not also to Bnei Noach, even though it does say in the same pasuk. So now, by the way, while we're darshaning the pasuk, the Gemara goes on to darshan another detail that we can learn from the pasuk as well. That's not directly related to the mitzvah of Bnei Noach, but ma behemtecha. Here is another thing that we can learn also. Just like crossbreeding animals is also in Eretz Yisrael and in Chutz La'aretz, and the reason for that is because in general only mitzvahs that have to do with the land are binding only in Eretz Yisrael. Mitzvahs that have to do with the person himself or with his animals are equally applicable in Eretz Yisrael as in Chutz La'aretz. So therefore, so just like that, af sodcha, the same way the isur implied by your field, namely you're not allowed to cross graft trees, bein ba'aretz bein mechutz la'aretz, that applies in Eretz Yisrael or in chutz la'aretz as well. You wouldn't be allowed to do such a graft in chutz la'aretz either. That's not specifically relevant to the dinim of Bnei Noach. But while we're mentioning the pasuk, then the Gemara takes the time to darshan that point as well. All right. So the point is because it says eschokoisei tishmodu. Then that means something that I already told you before. Well, the Gemara asks Elamayata, by that logic, what about, you have another place where the Torah introduces a group of mitzvahs, something like that. The Pasuk says you should observe my chukim and my mishpatim, which is it says that in other places in the Torah. In particular, it says it by Arias. It says it various other places. So would that mean chukim shechakakti l'chakvar? Would that mean all the mitzvahs that I've already told you? Then it would come out that goyim are chayiv in all the mitzvahs. It's true. It's at the beginning of Parashas Arayas, and Goyim are chayiv in some Arayas. But nevertheless, when the pasuk is saying that the pasuk continues that you should keep my chukim and my mishpatim, asher yasa oisam ha'adam machay b'hem, that a person should do them and live through them. Which is from that we learn, for example, the concept that pikuach nefesh is doicha most mitzvahs in the Torah. So you would say in that case that the earlier part of the pasuk then would have to be referring with shmartim as chukoyse ves mishpatay would refer to the whole Torah. And by that logic, it would mean that Bnei Noach are also in them as well. It would be Seshem would be saying, you had these mitzvahs before as Bnei Noach, and now you're going to continue to have them as Jews. So that's one way of understanding the question of the Gemara. The Yad Rama says it might even be talking specifically about the Arayas, but the question is that in that case we have many Arayas that are only on us Jews. We learned in the earlier sugya that Bnei Noach are only us in a small subset of the Arayas that we are. They're mutter in Nida, they're mutter in a number of other ones that would be also to us. If you're going to say that Ushmartim es chokosev es mishpartai means things that I already commanded you before, then it would mean that Goyim should be us in all of the Arayas. And the answer is no. Hosam Ushmartim as Chokoisei Dahashta. The words of Shmartim as Chokoisei means the ones that I'm going to be giving you now. I'm going to be giving you the parasha of Arayas and other mitzvahs now. Hocha, but when it comes to Kilayim, the expression is Es Chokoisei Tishmodu. It has the word Chokoisei before the word Tishmodu. By Ushmartim as Chokoisei, he's saying observe my chukim. So it means observe these new chukim that I'm going to be giving you now. But when it comes to the parasha of Arayas, where the expression is es chukosai tishmodu, then it means my chukim that I have previously given you. Not previously, the ones that I'm going to give you now, es chukosai, the mitzvahs that I'm about to give you, tishmodu, you should be keeping. So that means chukim de meikra tishmodu. So again, by shmartim es chukosai, it's saying first you should keep. What are you going to keep? Es chukosai, the chukim that I'm going to start giving you now. But by kilayim, the expression es chukosai tishmodu, my chukim you should keep, it implies, in other words, that there are chukim that I've already previously given you, and now you should keep it. So it means that they're only binding on Jews and not on Bnei Noach. So we said before there are certain arayas that are binding on them, but that we learn from other psukim. Now, Rashi asks the question that by Shmita and Yovel it also says, Es Mishpatai Tasu, Es Chokoisei Tishmodu. And there you have the word Mishpatai before Tasu and Chokoisei before Tishmodu. So Rashi says, fine, but since the Pasuk starts by saying as mishpatei tasu, keep my mishpatim, then the normal thing is to consider it to continue as chukoisei deshmoru. So there we can't learn that it means my chukim that I previously gave you, you should continue observing now, which would mean that Shemitah and Yovel are binding on Bnei Noach. They're not, of course, so therefore, so because they are the chukoisei deshmoru is after other words in the Pasuk. So it works that way as well. So only by Kilayim, where it says Chokosei Tishmoru, then Rabbi Lazar is saying from there we can learn that it means it was binding on them before, and now it continues to be binding on them. But I'm summarizes, given that according to the Tanakhama, those were not included, neither Sirus that Rabbi Chidke had said, nor Kilayim that Rabbi Lazar had said, are listed among the Tanakhama, Shev Mitzvahs for Noach. So Goyim are also in them, however, they're not Chayiv Misa for them. Okay. So that's the end of the discussion about the Shev Mitzvahs.
What's the logic to exclude the Goyim from certain mitzvahs? How do we
It's actually the other way around. I mean, basically we should assume that Goyim are potter for most mitzvahs. The Torah in general was given to the Jewish people, but we have certain mitzvahs that are binding on the Goyim, which we learn from various psukim. So now we have the Shev Mitzvah Bnei Noach, but then in addition, we do have certain psukim that imply that they're chayiv in some other mitzvahs as well. So therefore, the Rambam paskins that they are piyashmua that we learn from Torah Shabbal Peh that they are included, that they are also in these things as well, Sirus and Kilayim. However, they're not chayiv misa for it. And then also we learned previously when we learned on Nun Ches Amud Beis that if a goy hits a yid, then he's chayiv misa. That Amam had said that it also means we tell him that he's chayiv misa, but he's not actually chayiv misa for it. And for that matter, that Amam says the same thing when we said that a goy is not allowed to keep Shabbos. Same thing. You have the only seven for which they're chayiv misa are the official seven which the Tanakhama had listed, the familiar list of seven that. There's a machlokas, we had machlokas of several different tanoim, which else is included. But the seven that the Tanakhama had said are the official seven that we're all familiar with. Avodah Zorah, Gilah Arayis, Shfichas Damim, Gezel, Birkas Hashem, Avodah Zorah, and Dinim. And Eva Mechah.
Gilah Arayis only
applies to Eish Ish? We said there's altogether the six types of Arayis that are also to Bnei Noach. Eish Ish, certain close relatives, Zachur and Behema, yeah. Okay. Fine.
And how do we know that they're not included in the other ones again?
So the other ones, because again, we had Sutton Tanoim are saying that, but in general, the halacha is usually like the rabbin, Yochid v'rabim, halacha k'rabim. Since the Tanakhama did not list them, then even though sort of Chidka and Rebbe Lozer and everybody have psukim respectively for their opinions, so the Rambam learns, we learn from Torah Shabbal Peh, they are chayev in these other ones as well, however, not to the extent where they'd be chayev misa or anything if they violate them. Yeah, or Malkus or anything like that. Yeah. You have the official seven that they're chayiv in. You have the official seven: Avodah Zorah, Gilah Arayis, Shfichas Damim, Birkas Hashem, Avodah Zorah, Eiv Menachai, and Dinim. Then you have several other things which we're saying they're also to do, including Sirus and Kilayim, and to observe Shabbos and so forth. However, they're not chayiv misa for those things. And then you have, additionally, that Rambam says, for the most part, they can accept on themselves individual mitzvahs and do them, and there's no problem with that as long as they're not making a whole new religion out of it. So they can, for example, they can choose to give tzedakah. They can choose to bring an ovla. And then there are a few exceptions. Tefillin is one of them. It's a sign between us and Hashem. So there are a few exceptions, but basically, if they want to keep mitzvahs to receive a reward from Hashem, then for the most part, we don't prevent them, with a few exceptions. Shabbos is one of the exceptions.
Shabbos, they're not allowed.
Tefillin, Rishonim, bring, they're not allowed. There's a few examples that they're not allowed. But for example, even Mila, which is usually for us Jews, if they want to do Mila because it's a mitzvah, then I think the halacha is they're allowed. They could do it if, let's say, they have an infection or whatever. That's a different matter. Yeah. All right. Moving along, now
why is it a mitzvah, Mila, then? Why is it a mitzvah?
It's a mitzvah what? Mila is a mitzvah. I mean, it's one of the 613 mitzvahs.
Them.
Oh, so for that's what I say. That tzedakah is not specifically a mitzvah for them either. But if they want to do it, then they can. Ola is not a mitzvah specifically for them either. But if they want to, they could, yeah. Okay, let's move on. Mm-hmm. Okay. Did we they, this whole thing, this whole sugya that we've been spending four dafim on about Shev Mitzvah Benayach is really itself kind of a digression, because in the Mishnah we mentioned the case where a person blasphemes, where a person curses Hashem, and we talked about that goyim are also in that as well, because it says ish, and we went through a whole, and that led us into the whole sugya of Shev Mitzvah Benayach. Now we're getting back to this matter of Birkas Hashem. So we said in the Mishnah. So Rabbi Shlomo ben Korcha had said the whole time during the case, when we have the guy on trial, we don't want the edim every time to be saying the exact words that the guy used to blaspheme Hashem, because it would be disrespectful to Hashem. So instead, Rabbi Shlomo ben Korcha said that they use the expression Yake Yoisi es Yoisi. So they would say that the person said, may Yoisi hit or strike Yoisi. So we used Yoisi as a placeholder for Hashem's name. We said, and Rashi had mentioned on the Mishnah, because Yosi is four letters just like Yudke Vavke, and it has the gematria of Shem Alekim. Okay, so the Gemara says, Amar Rav Acha bar Yaakov, Eine Chayev ad sheyivorech Shem ben Arba Oisius. This that we're saying, that the person is Chayev Misa, is only if he were to bless, which is the euphemism for curse, the name of four letters. The name Yudke Vavke. Meaning Rashi says you don't require, it doesn't have to be the shame of 42 letters. It doesn't have to be the shame of 42 letters, which is a more unique name of Hashem. It doesn't have to be that. The name of four letters, Yudke Vavke, would be enough. La Puki ben Shteyosi Esteloy, as opposed to if he had cursed the name of Hashem of two letters, Yudke, then he wouldn't be Chayev Misa for that. He might be well Chayev Malkus or Makas Mardus or something, but Misa not. So he must have Pshita. Yaka Yosi Es Yosi. Now, what do you mean? The Mishnah had clearly said that we say Yaka Yosi Es Yosi, and the whole reason we're using Yosi as a placeholder is because it's four letters and it has gematria of Shem Elikim. So therefore, that shows that we need something of four letters. So obviously, he's only Chayv if he used a four-letter name of Hashem. And the answer is Ma'ud Tamer Mil Sabam who did not got. The Mishnah may have just used Yosi as just like a random word.
Why not Pliny?
Whatever. The Chamash Malon. Therefore, Rav Acha bar Yaakov tells us that no, the Mishnah specifically picked a name of four letters to show us that he's Chayv only if he cursed the new using the name of Hashem of four letters. Which, by the way, there you have a machloikas, as we talked about the other day. The Rambam holds that that would include the name Yudke Vavke as well as the name Adnai. The Rambam holds that if a person were to curse the name Adnai, he would also be Chayev Misa. The Rama disagrees with that and says, no, only Yudke Vavke. We talked about Andafnum.
Any other words?
Any other ones? No, any other ones would be considered Kinuyim.
He may well get Malkus,
but Missy, he wouldn't get it. Missy, he wouldn't be getting. We learned previously on Daphne and Vav. Well, not previously on Daphne and Vav, the Gemara had used the expression, Shem HaMiyuchad, but Missa. So basically, the question boils down to what's considered Shem HaMiyuchad. Does it mean specifically Yudke Vavke, which is unique to Hashem, or does it include Adnai as well? I mentioned then, for example, Rabbi Yeshua Hanogir, a grandson of the Rambam, explains, for example, that there's a difference in Shem HaMefodesh would be specifically the name of Ford, mean the name Yudke Vavke. Okay. Shem HaMeyuchad could include Adnai as well.
Okay, so what Moshe Rabbeinu cursed the what is said Hashem's name?
He used Hashem's name Yudke Vavke to kill the Mitzvah. Yeah. Ikadamri, another version of the discussion, Omer of Acha Bayakov, Shmamina, that the fact that the Mishnah uses the word Yosi for this purpose, Shmamina Shem Ben Abba Oisius Nami Shemhu. The other, so the first version was that Abacha Bayakov was making the point that it has to daf to be the four-lettered name and not the two-lettered name. Now, in the second version, you should know that also the name of Hashem of four letters, Yudke Vavke, is also considered the name of Hashem for this purpose, and you shouldn't think it means dafka the 42-letter name. So the Gemara says Pshita, Yaka Yosi, Yes Yosi. It's not. Again, obviously the Mishnah used the name Yosi, which is four letters, to indicate that it has to be the four-letter name of Hashem. And the answer is again, Ma'od Tema Ad De'ik Hashem Rabba. Maybe it has to be the much greater name, the 42-letter name, or Mil Sabalmo Denakat. And again, maybe the Mishnah used just the word Yosi randomly, and not specifically to mean that it has to be four letters. Kamash Malon, therefore, Rabbi Acha bar Yaakov tells us that no, the Mishnah specifically chose a name of four letters to indicate this point.
That's Shem Rabba.
So Shem Rabba would mean a great name, would be like the name of 42 letters, yeah. Okay, so the point is, according to either version, the point is the person is chayev for cursing the name of Hashem of four letters, according to the Rambam, Yudke Vavke, or Adnai, according to the Rambam, only Yudke Vavke, but not anything less, not, for example, Yudke, and not anything more. It doesn't have to be the name of 42 letters. Okay. Next, the Mishnah had said Nigmar Adin Chola. We said when it comes to the Gemar Din, they can't execute the person based on the evidence Yake Yosi Es Yosi. After all, what if he really said Yake Es Yosi Es Yosi? He's not Chayim Misa for that. So ultimately, the Dayonim have to hear from the Edim that the man said such and that the person said such and such. So the Mishnah had said they.
How would they know?
So therefore, the Mishnah says they send everybody else out. They tell the eldest of the Edim, they tell them, tell us exactly what you heard. And he says it, and then the Dayanim stand up and they do Kriya. So let's work out both those things. How do we know they stand up and how do we know they do Kriya? Oyndin Minolon, first of all, where do we know that they have to stand up when they're going to hear Hashem's name? Now the point is, in other words, that the Or HaNer points out on the face of it, they have to stand for the Kriya. Kriya itself has to be done standing. But the point is that the Gemara is understanding that
Tear Kriya,
when a person tears Kriya after their relative morning. Passes away. Yeah. So the Or HaNer explains when it comes to Kriya for relatives, then we know it has to be done standing. Right. We wouldn't know that Kriya for other purposes has to be done standing. Therefore, the Gemara is seeking over here how we know they have to stand in the first place when they're hearing Hashem's name. So the answer is Amar Yitzchak Ba'ami, De Amar Kra, you have the pasuk like this. In Sefer Shoftim, you have the story where at one point the Jewish people are being subjugated by Eglon Melech Moav, and then Ehud comes over there with a bunch of people to give a gift to him, and then he sends them all away, and he comes back to Ehud and says, I have a secret message for you, and meanwhile he has a sword strapped to his thigh, and when Eglon gets up to hear his message, then he stabs him. So the pasuk says the Ehud bo Elov. Ehud came to Eglon. V'hu yoshev v'aliyas hamakera ashaloi. He was sitting in the cool upper chamber that he had. In those times, it would often be hot indoors. So therefore, they would have an upstairs floor. That wasn't complete. It was more airy. It had like a lot of windows or whatever. And then therefore it would be like a cool area for him to sit. So he was sitting by himself, Levade by himself. But the point is he had to be by himself.
Oh, they go the head, they chop the head and then go.
He's not going to chop his head off. He stabbed him.
But the point, in...
he has to have the king by himself because otherwise his retainers are going to go and kill him.
No, I'm saying why did he come to execute him?
Because he had been oppressing the Jewish people for 18 years, and it's time for the Jewish people to be saved from him. Mm. So he comes to him, Levadre, by himself, Vayomer Ehud, and Ehud says, Dvar Elikim Le'alecha, I have a message to you from Hashem, Vayokam Alakise, and Eglon got up. Which, by the way, in the schus of that is why he had Rus, and ultimately the whole Malchus based David descends from him in the schus of that that he showed respect for Hashem in what turned out to be his last moments. So now, Valo Dvorim Kavachomer. So now we can make a Kavachomer. Uma Eglon Melech Moyev Shu Nochri. Madach Eglon, who was a Goyish king, Velo Yoda Elabakinui, and he doesn't even know the name Yudke Vovke. The only way he knows of the concept of Hashem is as a Kinui, as we see that Ehud doesn't tell him, I have a message to you from Yudke Vovke. He says, I have a message to you from Elikim, because he knows that that's all Eglon is going to understand is the concept of Elikim. Omad, and still Eglon stood up in respect for Hashem. Yisrael, v'shem ha'mefurash, Allah has kama v'kama, how much more so a Yid hears the actual shem ha'mefurash, the actual name of Yudke Vovke, how much more so he has to stand in honor of that. So therefore, so the Dayanim have to stand up when the Edim are going to say the name of Hashem. So that's how it works out. Koren Minola. Now, how do we know that they have to rip their clothes when they hear the Edim saying over the blasphemy that the guy said? So you have like this in Sefer Melachim and also in Sefer Yeshaya, it tells how Sancheriv, when he sent his army to besiege Yerushalayim, he sent Rav Shekeh, one of his top people, to go and give a whole speech trying to convince the Jews to surrender. And then in the course of his speech, he says, what makes you think that your God is going to save you? None of the other gods of any of the other nations have saved them. So he's claiming that Hashem is no better. And the Pasuk even uses the expression on him, L'chore Felikim, that he blasphemed Hashem. That he actually, so in other words, it's not so. In other words, the Pasuk doesn't record him actually saying a curse against Hashem, but we have to understand that he did that as well. And the Pasuk describes, Vayovayo Yokim ben Chilkiyahu, v'goyim of a Shevna Asofer, El Yochim ben Chilkiyahu, who was one of the high people in Chizkiyah's government, the Shevna Sofer and Shevna the Sofer. Earlier in the Masechta, by the way, we had something about Shevna Asher al Aboyis, the Shevna who was in charge of the palace. Whether that's the same Shevna as here, is there some discussion about that? David the Gemara had said that Shevna was a Rosha and he was trying to surrender to Sancheirev and so on and so forth. So maybe it means it's the same one and he had been demoted from Asher al Aboyis to Sofer, or maybe it's a different one. Anyway.
Elikim was a brother of one of the other kings.
There was a nevuah of Yeshaya that says great things about what this El Yochim is going to be able to accomplish as chief of staff to Chizkiyahu. There was an important yid. And Shevna Asofer, Yoyach ben Asof HaMazgir, and Yoyach ben Asof, the secretary, They came, a Mazgu, actually, Rashi explains that. So in modern Hebrew, Mazgu means a secretary. Rashi explains it more, means more like the one in charge of the king's appointments. Like he would be the one to remind the king you have an appointment with so-and-so. Anyway, so they came, they came to him with their clothes ripped, and they told him what Rav Shakeh had said. So we see that so they heard Rav Shakeh speaking these blasphemous words against Hashem, and then and they ripped their clothes. So therefore, so we see the same thing. The Dayanim of the Beis Din have to do the same thing. Okay, we said Veloy Ma'achin. We said that once they've ripped their clothes, they're never allowed to completely sew it up. Elsewhere in the Gemara, in Moed Katan in particular, it draws a distinction. There's ma'achin, which means to sew it up in such a way where you can't even tell that it was ripped. Versus you have other kinds of sewing. So often nowadays in practice, because clothing is cheap, in practice after Shiva, people usually just throw away the ripped clothing. In principle, you could want to sew it back up and continue using it, but with certain kinds of kriyas, you're allowed to, with certain kinds, you're not allowed to. So here we're saying, this is one of the ones that lulei ma'achin, you're not allowed to sew it up, back up completely. So the Gemara says Manolan, where do we know that from? Amar Rabba Bahu asked you Kriya Kriya. We learn from Xeda Shava of the Kriya that they did over here when they heard what Rav Shakeh said from the Kriya that Elisha did when Eliyahu went up to Shemayim. Xeda Shava, yeah. Siv Hacha Krue Begonim, Uchtivasim Ve'Elisha Roya, Elisha saw as Eliyahu was going up to Shemayim, V'hum Mitzayek, and he's screaming out, Ovi, Ovi, my father, which means my Rebbe, Rachav Yisrael, the chariots of the Jewish people, or Faroshav and his horsemen, meaning that you with your tefillahs were more effective for the Jewish people than all the chariots and horsemen of the kingdom. Then he never saw Elisha, he never saw Eliyahu again. And he grabbed a hold of his clothing. And he ripped them in, and he ripped them in two. Now, why does that have to say the Shnaim Kroim? Mimash Mashanema Vayikroim the Shnaim. Once it says he ripped them in two, any Adair Shahin Kroim, then of course it means he now has ripped pieces. Why does it have to use the word Kroim? Uma Tamad Loima Kroim. So why does it have to repeat the word Kroim? Malamachin Kroim La'olam. From here we learn that it stayed ripped forever. So the same way as over there for his Rebbe, he ripped his clothing and he was never allowed to completely sew it up. The same way now, when the Dayanim are hearing that are hearing what the person said, then they also have to rip their clothes and never sew it up. So Tosfos actually wonders why we need a different limud for it in Moed Katan when we're talking about doing kriya standing. So it says by ear, if he stood up and he ripped his clothing. So there also we see that he stood up, and there also we see that he ripped his clothing, and we should be able to learn from that as well. Anyway, so from all of this we learn therefore that when they rip their clothes because they heard a blasphemy of Hashem, then they can't sew it back up. All right, so the Gemara says, Tanan Abanan, let's learn some dinim about that. It says in a Braisa, Echad HaShemea, both the one who hears the original blasphemy from the person who said it, the Echad HaShemea M'pi HaShemea, or if he hears it secondhand, like the Dayanim are hearing it from the Edim, Chayav the Kroya, then they have to tear. V'Edim in Chayav and the Kroya, the Edim do not have to rip their clothes when they're saying it in Beis Din, Shekra Koru, Mishar Shashamu, because they already ripped their clothes when they first heard it. When they first heard the guy saying this, and they gave him Asura and all that, they ripped their clothes right then. So now when they're saying it over in Beis Din, they don't have to say it again. They don't have to rip their clothes again. So the Gemara says, what's the difference? So what? They ripped their Haka Shami Hashta. The fact is they're hearing it again. They're hearing themselves say it. Why shouldn't they? Why shouldn't they have to rip again? And the answer is loy sakadai duch. You can't think that way. Dichtiv, because again, by the story with Rav Shakeh and his insults to Hashem, the pasuk says, "Vayhi kishmaya melech Chizkiyahu." When Chizkiyahu heard Esdivrei Rav Shakeh, is in parenthesis, actually doesn't have to say that in the pasuk, but when Chizkiyahu heard what his messengers El Yokim and Shevna and Yoyach had come and reported to him, what happened? Vayikras begodav. Then he ripped his clothes. So we learn from that. Hamelech Chizkiyahu kara vehem lekaru. He ripped his clothes. They didn't.
I don't know. King has to rip.
So anybody has to rip. The king still has to show honor to Hashem. No matter his position or not, he still has to show respect for Hashem. Tosfos actually wonders why Bechlal are they telling the words in so many words to the king? Didn't we? If they're just recording, in other words, why don't they use a kinui? Why don't they say the same thing? Right. Why don't they use a kinui of Yosi like we did in the mission?
How do you
know?
Because they know about Hashem.
Okay, the question is, why are they, when they're reporting it to Chizkiyahu, why do they need to say the actual words that Rav Shakeh said? So there's a different collection of Tosfos that gives the answer. The Gemara is going to explain soon that Rav Shakei was a Yisrael Mumer. He was actually a Jew who had gone off the Derech and become a Mumer and become a Meshumad to Avodah Zarah. That being the case, when they were coming to Chizkiyah, they were not just telling him in order to you should know what's going on. They were actually telling him as Eidos that Chizkiyah and his Beis Din should judge Rav Shakei as being Chayiv Misa. Now, in practice, they might not be able to get him because he's serving over there in the army of Ashur, but the point is, in principle, now that they're judging him, if they get a hold of him, they're going to be Machayev and Misa. So therefore, they have to tell him the actual words.
Because if he wasn't a Jew, they wouldn't.
If it wasn't a Jew, then yeah, the Gemara is going to explain soon anyway. Yeah. Okay. So we learn from that. So he ripped his clothes because he's hearing it for the first time, but they don't have to rip their clothes because they already heard it previously when Rav Shakei said it. The Gemara continues. Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Hashemeya as Korah mipia Oved Kechavim. If a person hears a name of Hashem and a curse against Hashem from a goy, ain't a chay of the kroya. He does not have to rip his clothes. V'im toimer Rav Shakei. You're going to say, well, then why did they take kriya when they heard from Rav Shakei? The answer is Yisroel Mumahoya. Like we just said, he was a Yisroel Mumer. So he's a yid. So that din applies. V'amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Furthermore, the kriya would only be where he used the name Yudke Vovke, or according to the Rambam, also the name Aleph Dalet Nun Yud. La Puki Kinui Deloy, as opposed to if he just heard the Goy, or even a Yid, if he heard a Yid cursing Hashem's name, but not with the name Yudke Vovke or Adnai, but with one of the other names of Hashem, and that includes names of Hashem in other languages, Deloy, then they're not chayiv to tear kriya for that. However, the Gemara says, these two statements of Rabbi Yehuda disagree with Rabbi Chiya b'Tarvayu in both of them. Because the Amar Rabbi Chiya, Shemeya Azkora b'Zman Hazeh, Rabbi Chiya says that nowadays, when we don't have, when people are not as afraid of Beis Din, then if he hears a curse of Hashem, nowadays, Ein Chai of the Kroya, he does not have to rip his clothes. She'im Iyata Omer Kain, because Rabbi Chiya says, if you weren't to say that, Nismala Kola Begat Kroyim, a person's clothing would be full of rips, because the Goyim all the time are cursing Hashem. Now, the point is, Miman, now we have to, well, who are we saying is cursing Hashem? Miman. Do we mean that your Jews are regularly doing this? Are Jews so hefker that they're going to go and curse Hashem over and over to the extent you would say your whole clothes would be ripped? Mm-hmm. Obviously not. Jews have more respect for Hashem than that. Obviously we're talking about that Rabbi Chiya is saying you're going to hear it all the time from Goyim. If you're going to tell me that only this only applies when they use the Shem HaMiyuchad, do the Goyim B'chlam know the Shem HaMiyuchad? When they curse Hashem, they do it in their own languages. They say God or Boch or whatever in their particular languages.
We see that in the dollar.
They say it out of respect and off the crust. Elalav the kinui. Obviously, we mean a kinui because again, the names of Hashem in different languages are the equivalent of kinuim. Ushmamina bismana zehudeloi. So we see from that, Rabbi Chiya is saying, as a practical matter, nowadays the chacham are not going to require you to rip your clothes because the goyim do it so often, and then your clothes would be all ripped up. Homa ikra chayev, implying that if it weren't for that originally, when Beis Din had power and they could even punish goyim who could do such things, then a person would be chayev. So even though there's a kinui, and even though it's done by a goy, then he would have been chayev. So Shmamino, we see from that Rabbi Chiya disagrees with both statements of Rabbi Yehuda. You would be chayev even if you hear it from a goy, and you would be chayev even if the goy is using a kinui. Just practically speaking, nowadays we can't do that, and therefore he's potter.
What problem did the Beis Din have to...
Beis Din had power over the Goyim as well, yeah. Anyway, the Yerushalmi brings in this connection of a story where Rabbi Chiya one time is riding along on a donkey and he hears a Goy over and over cursing Hashem, and every time he's ripping Kriya, because he held like Rabbi Chiya over here that you have to, and he doesn't even hold. There's an exception to Zman Hazeh. Eventually, Reish Lakish, no Reish Lakish. Whatever, Reish Lakish lived long after the Churban, yeah.
So which word did he use?
At the point, obviously, the guy wasn't using Yud Kevav, he was using a Kinui. Anyway, so eventually, Reish Lakish gets tired of it. He gets off of the donkey and gives the guy Zets in the chest and says, what do you think? Your mother is going to have that many clothes for me to make up for all the clothes that I'm having to rip because you're talking like this? So yeah. Next, we said in the Mishnah, we said in the Mishnah that the first aid has said the actual curse that the person said. And we said the Dayanim have to rip their clothes when they hear it. Now, we don't require the second aid to repeat the words again. Instead, he says, I heard the same thing that he did. Omer Reish Lakish, so Reish Lakish says, Shmamina, you can prove from that, af an af ani kamoihu kosher b'dinim mamonis uv'dinim nefashis. Really, in principle, such a thing would always be kosher in dinim mamonis and in dinim nefashis. It would be enough that the first aid says something and the second aid says, I heard the same thing. However, the Chachamim went the extra mile when it comes to these things. Dinim mamonis and dinim nefashis, it's not enough usually for the aid to just say, yeah, I heard the same thing as he did. Usually we require him to actually say explicitly what's going on, what he saw and what he heard. The Chacha, but over here, Kivin Delay Efsher, it's not possible because we don't want every aid to have to say the same thing again. And Beis Din is going to have to tear Kriya again and again. Then the Chachamim left it the way it was, Midar Raisa. And Reish Lakish says it has to be that way. If you were going to say that Minat Torah, such a thing would be possible, and Minat Torah, every aid has to say exactly the entire thing, what would you say over here? Mishum de la Efsha, because it's impossible for each of them to say the same thing. Katlin and la Gavra. Katlin and la Gavra, we can execute the person without proper eidos. So obviously, therefore, the implication is Minat Torah, such eidos is kosher. So in this case, then fine, that's what we do. But normally, we do require the eidim to say individually what they actually heard rather what they actually saw rather than just saying I it was the same thing as him. Okay. Then we said in the mission of Ashlishi Oma Afani Kamoyu, if there's a third aid, then he also says, I heard the same thing. Why do we have to mention the third aid? Thus, we have a Stam Mishnah like Rabbi Akiva, who holds as a hekesh between two and three. Namely, the Pasuk says, the Pasuk says, on the word of two or three Adim, the matter will be established. Now, why does it have to say three? If two are enough, then of course three is enough. So in a Mishnah, in Masechta Makkos, Rabbi Akiva says that it means we learn from this that three are just like two in the sense, if you have two Edim and one of them turns out to be a relative or apostle, right, then obviously the whole Edos is thrown out. Right. Now, what happens if you have three of them and one of them turns out to be a relative? Okay. You might say, so what? You still have two good Edim without him. Oh. Rabbi Akiva says, from this Hekesh, we learn that the Edos is possible. Even 100, yeah. So that's the point. In other words, as long as it's all one group of Edim, him, then yes, we say that one of them is possible, then it passels all of them. Yeah. So we see that our Mishnah is like Rabbi Akiva in that.
Do we say that the least amount could be like two or three?
The minimum is two, and then if you have three, then yeah. Okay. Getting back to, so now continuing with the list of people that are Chayiv Skila, we had a previous Mishnah on Daf Nun Dalet that listed 18 people that are Chayiv Skila. So far we've been going through most of them are dealt with in this Perek. But then Sotah Ramoda, because the dinim of him are a little more complicated than Daf Nun Gimel, actually. There was a list of 18. So on Daf Nun Gimel, we had the list of 18 of them, and we've been going through the Perek since then. We've been going through discussing the details about them. Okay, so now we're up to Ha'ovid Avodas Kechavim. Somebody who worships Avodah Zarah is Chayiv Skila. So what do we mean by that? What's defined as worshiping Avodah Zarah? Echad Ha'ovid, whether he serves Avodah Zarah, which we're going to see in the Gemara what that phrase means, the Echad HaMezabeach, or whether he shechts an animal in honor of Avodah Zarah, the Echad HaMekater, or he burns something for Avodah Zarah, the Echad HaMenasech, or he pours out a liquid for Avodah Zarah, wine or something else. The Echad HaMeshtachve, or he bows to the Avodah Zarah. The Echad HaMekabloi, all of Leilekha, or he accepts it as a god on himself. The Ha'omer Loi Keli Ata, or he says to the idol, you are my god. Now Rashi has two explanations on that last point. One is that it can mean he just says that, then that's already considered that he's Chayev for Avodah Zarah. The second explanation, Rashi says, is Mekabla Leilaka would be where the idol is not present. So in other words, the difference is, according to the first explanation, Mekabla Olav Leilaka means it's enough for him to just say about the Avodah Zarah, you are my God, and that already makes him Chayiv Misa. As opposed to, Rashi says, the second explanation is there are two different things. Mekabla Olav Leilaka would mean the idol is not present. He says, such and such is my God. It's not actually there right now. And then Ha'omer Lo Keli Ata would be it stands in front of the idol and says, you are my God. So Eve said then, according to that second explanation, actually, it would. So according to the first explanation, really, the word should be ha'oimer, ha'makabla olav le'leka, namely ha'oimer le'keliata, as opposed to according to the second explanation, then we would have the gifts of v'ha'oimer, because they're two different things. One b'fanav, one shalei b'fanav. Avol, however, continues the Mishnah. Hamagafif, if somebody hugs the Avodah Zarah, v'amenashik, or he kisses it, v'amachabed, or he sweeps the floor in front of it, v'amerabitz, or he sprinkles like water or something to lay down the dust, to keep the dust from rising, v'hasa, like they would do in those days when they had earthen floors, they would do that. V'amerachetz, or he bathes the idol, v'asoch, or he smears it with oil or ointment or whatever, v'hamalbish, or he puts clothing on it, v'hamano, or he puts shoes on it, over Beloisa said those things he's not chayv mister for those things he's over on a Loisa said.
What's considered exactly an idol in this case?
An idol is an idol.
Anything that has like a picture of
No, it doesn't mean
person?
A picture. It can mean something that people worship. No, we have, for example, Merkulis. We're going to talk about Merkulis as a trilithon. It's a thing of three stones. One stone, two stones, and another one on top of it is an Avodah Zarah called Merkulis. So in all those cases, over on a lois, I said, because the pasuk says lois saw, Rashi explains that there's several times where the Torah says lois sa'ovdim, don't worship Avodah Zarah. You have in the Aseret HaDibros twice in Yisro and Varschanan, you have the words lois shtach v'lehem lois sa'ovdim. Then you have in Parshas Mishpatim, in this coming week's parasha, we have lois shtach v'lelekem lois sa'ovdim, don't worship their gods and don't serve them, v'lois sasek maaseim, don't do like the deeds that the goyim do. So Rashi explains that's a separate thing. That's a lav. It's not referring to where this is the normal way of worshiping Avodah Zarah. Here we're talking about this is not the normal way and to worship the Avodah Zarah. It's just something they do out of respect for it. So therefore he's not chayav misa, however it is a lav. So therefore he's over on a lois, so he'd get malchus for that. Next, the Mishnah continues. If a person were to make a neder or shvur in the name of an idol, so a neder we know is that he makes such and such also to him. So Rashi says, for example, he says all the payrus in the world will be also in the name of such and such an avodah zarah. And Rashi adds the words im erchatz, if I bathe, although the Maharam says that's a mistake, that doesn't really belong, that's not part of the neder. In any case, the point is he's saying the neder in the name of avodah zarah. V'amakayim b'shvur, he makes a shvur in the name of such and such avodah zarah, I will or I won't do such and such. So those kinds of things also over below Sese. There he's also over on a lois Sese. Another pasuk from Parashas Mishpatim, v'shem alekim achedim lois hazkiru. Don't mention the names of other gods, and that means now there is an isser to mention them b'chlal. We're going to talk about later on Daf Samach Gimel that, for example, you're not allowed to say you're not allowed to tell a person, for example, meet me by this and this Avodah Zarah. But here we're talking about the main isser is we're saying to swear or to make nedorim or shavuos in the name of Avodah Zarah.
What about just saying the name?
Saying the name. So in general, we have the rule we're going to learn later on in a couple of blot that where it's mentioned in Tanakh, you're allowed to call it. Otherwise, you're not supposed to. You're supposed to alter the name.
We say like Papa or something.
So those are mentioned in Torah. That's different. The very fact that it's mentioned in the Torah means that it's not. It's still an Avodah Zarah, but it weakens its power of Torah. Okay. Next, continues the Mishnah. Ha'poyer atzmi l'baal poer. If a person opens himself up and goes to the bathroom in front of poer, and that's the normal way of worshiping poer, zuhi avedasa, and that's considered the normal way of worshiping it. So therefore, he'd be chayev for that. Now, the point is, even if he means to be mevaze it. Now you would think it's a bizoyan to do that in front of a getchka. So therefore, you would think that he would be. Rashi actually uses the expression you'd be chayev misa. The Tosfos Yomtiv wonders about that. Wait a minute. If he's thinking that he's doing it in order to dishonor the Avodah Zarah, how could he be Chayav Misa for that? Wouldn't he need Eidim Vahasra?
I mean, to dishonor, that's how he's honoring, no?
He doesn't realize. He thinks, let's say, that this is a... He thinks, let's say, that he's going to go to the bathroom. The Gemara is going to give an example.
Oh, he's going to the bathroom, I was doing it in front of the per. Oh.
So the question is, how can Rashi say he's chayiv misa for such a thing when he needs Eidim Vasra? So the Tosfos Yom Tov mentions, in fact, there are other mephoshim. For example, the Bar Tanura on the Mishnah says it means chayiv as in chayiv achatras, because he did b'shoigig. According to Rashi, who says that it means chayiv misa, the Tosfos Yom Tov explains, you would have to say, let's say, for example, so he's about to do this. There are Eidim over there. They warn him, don't do this because this is the normal way of worshiping Pa'ur and you're going to be Chayav Misa. And he says, you don't know what you're talking about and I'm going to do it anyway. Then he'd be Chayav Misa because they did give him Asura. He's claiming that it's dishonoring it. The fact is, the Edom gave him Asura and told him that's the normal way of worshiping it and therefore you're Chayav for it. So therefore, that would be enough to be Mechayav Misa for that.
But he does it without knowing, like he just does it because of the bathroom.
If he doesn't know without knowing, then he's shogeg, and he's
That's
not chayiv misa, of course, then it's a chatas. The point is, the fact that Rashi uses the expression chayiv misa, the Tosfos Yom Tov explains, you would have to have a case like that, where there are edim, they do give masra, but he says, oh, you don't know what you're talking about, there's no such thing as worshipping an avodah zarah this way, and he goes and does it, then he'd be chayiv misa, because the fact is, they did give masra, and he should have taken what they said, and he should have taken what they said seriously. Similarly, hazardic even the merkulus zui avodasa. Similarly, a person throws a rock at merkulus with the normal way of worshipping it. Rashi explains a merkulus was like I was just saying. You have it's a one rock, another rock, and then another one on top of them, and another one balanced on top of the two of them. So that was the symbol on avodasa called merkulus. And the normal way of worshipping it was to throw stones at it. So the same way zui avodasa, that's considered the normal avoda of it, and therefore a person would be chayav for that. Even again, he means to dishonor the avodasa.
No, all these is again.
It all,
If you
yeah.
know,
If he didn't know, then he'd be a chayav chatas. But incidentally, in this connection, it's an interesting point. You know, when it comes to Islam, the Rambam, who lived among Muslims almost his whole life, he writes very flatly that Islam is not avodah zarah, unlike Christianity.
Why not?
Christianity, because he says, because the fact is, they do believe in one Hashem.
Wow.
So the Christians believe in three in one, so therefore
right.
It's avodah zarah. So the Rambam holds it's avodah zarah even for them. Other Rishonim hold it's avodah zarah for us, but not for them. We're going to learn later on Daf Samach Gimel about Shittuf, so we'll talk about that. The good. Not kishuf, shituf, combining Hashem with something else.
Oh.
The Christian idea where they have their three in one
right.
is a combination of Hashem together with something else. So that's called shituf. And we're going to learn later on Daf Samach Gimel whether that's also to them or not. But so the Rambam holds it's also for them as well, and he holds they're considered Ovid Avodah Zarah. Many other Rishonim hold that for them it's not considered Avodah Zarah, but for us it is. In any case,
you're saying bowing down like to worship him? To worship him.
Okay, it's not a matter of bowing down. They accept him as God.
God
we said
God.
In the Mishnah, Makabla Olav Lelaka is enough.
No.
Anyway, the Muslims, on the other hand, they believe in one God. They call him Allah, but fine, that's just the Arabic name for God, same as we do. So the Rambam holds it's definitely not over Zohar, which has implications in Halacha. On the other hand, one of their ritual, it's interesting, one of their place, their holy place in Saudi Arabia over there in Mecca they call it the Black Stone. They go and they have processions around it and all kinds of things like that, and then they have a ceremony when they go on their pilgrimages over there. They have a ceremony where they throw rocks at a certain pillar over there. So there are Rishonim, the Yad Ramah talks about it, the Ran talks about it, that might be a vestige of this thing, of Merkulis that we're talking about over here, in which case it would mean their religion is Avodah Zarah. So in practice, I think in general, the poskim usually follow the opinion of the Rambam, but nevertheless, there is that consideration that maybe there is a degree of Avodah Zarah in what they're doing. Okay, and
again, we're able to go to a mosque. Officially.
So that's the thing. So one implication of the fact that Islam, according to the Rambam, is not a Bidazara, is you would be allowed to go into a mosque in a pinch, yeah. As opposed to into a church, it's much less allowed up Yalocha, yeah. Yeah, I remember actually when I was a boy, I lived in a town in Eretz Yisrael where there was a before the Israeli War of Independence. This town had a substantial Arab population, and they had a mosque over there. After they left during that war, then that mosque was turned into a shul. And I used to, so it's different. I mean, churches can also, according to many places, can be turned into a shul. There is an argument among the poskim whether you can turn a church into a shul. In practice, you have here and there. You have the yeshiva in Morristown used to be a monastery. The Chabad house in Omaha used to be a church. There are a number of examples like that where churches were turned into shuls, but not all poskim are comfortable with that idea. But a mosque is much less of an issue. Yeah. Okay, let's go. Let's go on.
Yeah, but I think is it? Yeah. It's a very to turn a shul into something else. Like
just
mosque.
Turn a shul into a mosque, like, where, yeah, it would be awesome.
Not really a mitzvah, but it's more like
a, yeah, it's a, yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says, "My echad ha'oved." When we started the Mishnah by saying anyone who worships, all the other things we mentioned in the Mishnah are worshiping, bringing a korban, shechting a korban, burning, pouring, etc. All of those are avoda. Amar Rabbi Yirmiyahu ha'chakama. Where the Mishnah means like this: echad ha'oved kedarka. First of all, you have a person who worships the avodah zarah in its normal way. So that would be, for example, with Pa'ur going to the bathroom in front of it, with Merkulis is throwing stones to it, etc. So that's Ha'ovid. And then the Echadam is a Be'ach. Then you have, in addition, someone who brings a korban, even where this is not the normal way of worshipping the Avodah Zarah. Pa'ur, for example, the normal way of worshipping it is not to shecht an animal to it. Nevertheless, if a person shechts an animal in honor of Pa'ur, he's still Chayav Misa. Aye, the normal way is bizoyan, is to go to the bathroom in front of it. It doesn't matter. Echadam is a beach, vechadam a kater, or he burns something, vechadam a nasich, or he pours something, vechadam a shtachva, if he bows to it, vafilo shaloi kadauka, even though those four things are not kadauka, nevertheless, he's still chayiv misa for that, as the Gemara is going to work out soon how we learn that. So the Gemara asks, the lechesh of Nami Zodik, why don't we mention also, why does the Mishnah list also sprinkling blood in honor of Avodah Zarah? The point is like this. The point is, as the Gemara is going to explain, anything that's done in honor of Hashem, lahavdil, a person does it in front of Avodah Zarah, he would, in honor of Avodah Zarah, he'd be chayiv misa. So we shecht korbanos to Hashem, we shecht korbanos to Hashem, therefore we can't shecht korbanos to Avodah Zarah. We bow to Hashem, therefore we can't bow to Avodah Zarah. And so that's so nisuch, we do nisuch to Hashem.
But
mine is not yayin. No, we do yayin all year round, we do mayim on sukkos. Okay. So all these things. So the question is, another avoda that we do before Hashem is to sprinkle the blood. So why don't we count that as well? Now, Rashi says, Mela, you're going to say, for example, now you have like this. When it comes to a korban, we're going to learn in Masechta Zvachim at the end of this year, Be'ez Hashem, we're going to start talking about the dinim of the avodas of korbanos. You have four major avodas with each korban. You have the shchita. You have Kabbalah Saddam, where he receives the blood in a basin. You have Holocha, where the Kohen walks the basin of blood over to the Mizbeach. And Zrika, where he sprinkles the blood on the Mizbeach. By Korban Pesach, yeah, they would be passing them back and forth to each other, yeah. Anyway, so the point is, Rashi says, yes, Mekabel and Moilech, fine, but we don't specifically find...
Zrika.
We don't specifically find anywhere in a pasuk where it's mentioned doing it in honor of Avodah Zarah. But we do all the four things that we mentioned in the Mishnah, we find psukim that refer to them being done in front of Avodah Zarah, and zrika, we also do find a pasuk that talks about blood for an Avodah Zarah, so that would imply sprinkling the blood. So in that case, the Mishnah should be listing five things. And the answer is, Amar Abaye is zorda kainu menasech, because that's included in menasech in the Mishnah. As the pasuk says, that I will not pour their libations of blood. Meaning, in other words, now a libation is normally that you take, like you said, wine or water or whatever, and you pour it in honor of Hashem, or lahavdil, a person does it in honor of a desire. Blood, a person doesn't normally pour. Blood is sprinkled. Right. However, we see that David is describing the sprinkling the blood of in front of Getchkes as asich, melosh nesech, so we see that it's included. So zrika and nisuch is considered the same thing. So yes. Okay. So now the Gemara says, okay, Tosfos, by the way, points out that now Rashi mentions that we do find psukim regarding shechting korbanos and burning things and pouring. We find psukim referring to people doing such things to getchkes. Tosfos points out one of those psukim is actually from a part of Parshas Hazinu with the machloikas tanoim. Whether that part, a few psukim in the middle of Parshas Hazinu, there's a machloikas. Rashi mentions it on the psukim over there. Whether those psukim are referring to Jews or whether they're referring to goyim, meaning when the pasuk says asher chelav zvachem yechelu, they would eat the fat of their korbanos. Is it referring to the goyim that they bring korbanos to their getchkes and the fire there consumes the fat and therefore the getchke, so to speak, eats the fat? Or is it referring faker to us Jewish people that the goyim? So therefore, in other words, the pasuk would be saying, where are their idols that are going to protect them? Look at that, they're worshipping their idols and bringing korbanos and burning things to them, and their idols are helpless and can't help them. Or faker, is it referring to us Jewish people that the goyim are going to say, look at that, Hashem doesn't seem to be helping the Jewish people despite the fact they bring him korbanos. They would say that because they see that Hashem doesn't seem to be helping us at a certain point in history. So yeah. So in that case, Tosfos says that the fact is we do have other psukim that also refer to burning things in honor of getchkes. So therefore, we have that as well. Fine. So the Gemara says, Minahani Mili, where do we know all this from, that these particular avodas that we said, these four avodas, a person would be chayav misa for? So the Tana Rabbanan, now you have a posik from this coming week's parasha, from parasha from Batim. The posik goes, Zeveach lalekim yochram, bilti lashem levadeh. The posik says, anyone who sacrifices to other gods will be destroyed only to Hashem alone. Rashi, by the way, makes a point on the pasuk that lo elokim means to the gods, namely the ones that we know from elsewhere in the Torah you're not allowed to worship. Otherwise, Rashi says, if it said le elokim, then it would mean to Hashem.
Right.
So ilu nema zeveach yochram. So if it hadn't said the word lilac kim at all, if it just said zeveach, the one who shechts yochram will be destroyed. Then I would have thought the pasuk is referring to somebody who shechts korbanos outside the besmikdash. So we wouldn't realize that it's talking about shechting to getchkes. We would think that it means he's shechting, but outside the besmikdash, a korban where he's not supposed to. We know the Torah tells us in Parshas Achrei Mos you're not allowed to do that. So you would have thought that a person is chayav misa for that. Therefore, the pasuk says in the middle the word lo elikim that he sacrifices to gods, and that means. So the pasuk is talking about a person who sacrifices to other god to other gods. Now Rashi points out that since it says lo elikim, so it means any god, any god other than Hashem, and that means even it's shloi kedarka. Because in other words, if the pasuk had said oived lelikim bizvicha yochram, then it would mean that then it would mean that only if it's that only if that's the normal way of worshiping that god. But since it says zaveach lelikim, then it means anyone who shechts in honor of any god, whether that's the normal way of doing it or whether it's not. The fact is, we have a different pasuk. We have a pasuk in Parashas Shoftim that's a vayelach vayaved elakim acherim, where there it's referring to where he worships it in its normal way. For example, poyer atzma lepoyer, etc. So again, so the pasuk is saying zeveach lelakim yochram. So therefore, so it means he shechts in honor of avodah zarah. Ainly ela bezeveach. So that would tell us only that that applies to shechting a korban. Mekatir menasach minayin. How do we know it also includes burning something for the avodah zarah and pouring or sprinkling something for the avodah zarah? Tamad leimah bilti l'Hashem levadeh. Therefore, the pasuk continues only to Hashem alone. Which means rikin ha'avodas kulam l'shem ha'miyuchad, meaning that it's emptying out and saying that any other avoda that is done in the Beis Hamikdash is something that can't be done for avodah zarah. It can only be done l'shem ha'miyuchad, only for Hashem himself. So therefore, all avodas that are done in the Beis Hamikdash are not allowed to be done for avodah zarah, and a person is chayav misa for that. What does that mean? L'fisha yotza zvicha lidun ba'avodas pnim. Now, in that case, we continue. So we're saying that shechting a korban. Now, so in that case, then so what? So it could have just said bilti l'Hashem levadeh. Then why does it say zeveach lelekim in the first place? Let it just say lelekim bilti l'Hashem levadeh. Anything has to be done exclusively for Hashem. And therefore, if it's done lelekim to other gods, then he'd be chayv misa. So why does it say zeveach? So l'fisha yotza zvicha. So now, shechting has been taken out of the general rule, lidun ba'avodas pnim, and we're saying that that's judged, and we can learn from that to all other avodas that are done inside. Meaning, we have a rule on the Torah, dava shahoy b'chlal. When you have something that was in a general rule, the yotzim in a klal lalamed, and it's taken out and singled out from the general rule to teach us lo lalamed al atzma yotzah. It doesn't just teach us about himself, el lalamed al klal kula yotzah. It teaches us about the whole rule. So minayin ladap. So therefore, so we learn from that all the other avodas that are done in the Beis Hamikdash, namely the kittur and the nisuch, are all things for which a person is chayav misa as well. Which Tosfos points out, by the way, if we didn't have the words bilti l'Hashem levadei, then we would think that it means only things that include blood. So we wouldn't know, for example, that it includes burning something in honor of the getchke or pouring something. We would only know, fine, shechting and sprinkling blood. So therefore, we need the pasuk bilti l'Hashem levadei to tell us that it means anything that's done in honor of Hashem in the Beis Hamikdash. If a person does it to a getchke, then he's chayav misa. How do we know to also include bowing, that a person is chayav misa for that? That's not an avodas pnim, after all. That's not specifically an avoda that's done to our, sure, they bow in the Beis Hamikdash, but it's not an avoda per se. So how do we know it's included?
The
coin and bow, but it doesn't mean it's not an avoda. Tamad loyma, therefore we have a different pasuk. Vayelech vayabed elekim achenim vayishtachu lahem. The pasuk describes that a person went and worshipped other gods and he bowed to them. So we see that bowing by itself, even though, again, whether it's kedarka or not, it still makes him chayav misa.
Isn't that the main thing about shouldn't bow down to Zara?
Fine, but the fact is we needed a pasuk to tell us. And the next pasuk continues that you take that man or that woman who did that and you give him a skilla. So we see that hishtachava by itself is something that would make him chayav misa. Well, the Gemara says onas shamayinu, so that tells us the punishment. Azhora minayin, where do we have a warning? We have a general rule that whenever the Torah, that you can't just have a punishment in the Torah. You have to have someplace in the Torah where it warns him not to do that. Now you can't learn from loisa avdeim because you can't learn from loisa avdeim because that would only mean that because that would only apply to so like this, the Gemara is going to explain later on that the pasuk from this coming week's parasha loisa shtach v'lahem loisa avdeim means, for example, you're not allowed to hug and kiss them and so forth, like we learned in the Mishnah. So you would think maybe shtach avah is the same kind of thing. Maybe it's only an issur and he's not actually chayav misa. And we wouldn't know about the hugging and kissing from it, for example. Therefore, we need a different pasuk from which it's clear that it's osur and chayav, and that that's osur to bow to them. In other words, okay. So in other words, like this: if it said lo yishtach v'lahem v'lo yisa'ovdeim, then you would say that it means there's no issur at all in hugging and kissing the avodah zarah. There is an issur on bowing, but not necessarily that would be chayav misa. The fact is, though, we use that pasuk to explain that a person is osur to hug or kiss or sweep or whatever in front of the avodah zarah. So therefore, we need a different pasuk that shows us that he's actually osur to bow to it than if he does his chayav misa. Talmud Lomar ki lo yishtach v'la keilacher. Therefore, another pasuk says, "Do not bow to another god." And again, you don't need it for kedarka, where it's a normal thing to bow to this avodah zarah. So it must be talking about where it's not the normal thing to bow to, and nevertheless, he's still also.
So any of it deserves you bow to it, you know?
Any of it deserves you bow to it, he's chayv misa. Yochol shani marabam of gafa v'amashik v'amanashik v'amanil. You would think maybe we should also include the other things we mentioned in the Mishnah, hugging it, or kissing it, or putting shoes on it. Tamad lema zeveach. Therefore, that's why we have the word zeveach. Which means, in other words, zvicha b'chlal hoisa, because as we said, zvicha shechting a korban was included in everything else because it was included as one of the avodas pnim. V'lama yotza, why was it singled out? Lahakish eleha, to make a hekish with it. V'lama loch ma zvicha miyuchedes she avodas pnim, just like shechting a korban is something that's done inside the besmikdash. V'chayovan aleo misa, and a person would be chayiv misa for doing it outside. And a person is chayiv misa for doing it for a getchke. Af kol she avodas pnim, v'chayovan aleo misa. Yotza. So therefore, so anything else that's done in the Beis Hamikdash, so in other words, as opposed to the hugging and kissing and putting shoes on or whatever, which are not done for Hashem, and therefore a person's not chayiv misa for doing them for Avodah Zarah. Yotza hishtachava lidin ba'atzma, and so now hishtachava, bowing, is singled out to learn from itself that even if it's not the normal way, even though it's not an avodah nasis b'fnim, because a person can bow to Hashem anywhere in the world, so yotza zvicha lidin al klal kolay, and then zvicha is teaching us about the klal in general. So in other words, we have two different things. We have the Torah singles out and says you're not allowed to shecht a korban to avodah zara. From that we learn any other thing which is like shechting, namely that it's avodah b'fnim. So therefore, it comes to include also kitur burning and nisuch pouring.
But again, how is putting clothes in the letters, I don't know, like dressing it, connected to Shechita?
It's not. That's the point. That's why he's not Chayim Misa for that. That's precisely where we learn.
What?
If it's the normal way, if this particular Avodah Zarah, the normal way of worshipping it is to dress it or put shoes on it or whatever, yes, it'd be Chayim Misa, because that we learn from a different pasuk. The pasuk says in Parashas Yud A, Eicha Yavdu Agoyim, shouldn't say, Eicha Yavdu Agoyim Ma'ela Eselikeyem, how do these nations worship their gods? Ve'esekein Gamoni, I'm going to do the same thing. From that we learn that if there's an Avodah Zarah, that the normal way is to do such and such to it, then a person is Chayim Misa for doing that.
So how do we know even clothes?
So
what happens if he does avodas pnim to Hashem, but outside of the Beis Hamikdash?
So that's something else. That is chayiv kodesh for. That's his chayiv kodesh for. But we're not dealing with that right now. We're dealing with avodah zarah. So far, in other words, to recap, what we have is like this. There is four basic avoidas. There's three avoidas that are considered avoidas pnim. These are things that are done to Hashem, for Hashem in the Beis Mikdash, and a person does them anywhere to avodah zarah, he's chayiv misa. Namely, zibuach, shechting, kitur, burning, nisuch, pouring. So those three things are done in honor of Hashem in the Beis Mikdash. And because it says zeveach separately, so we learn from that, that's an example. Lo lelamad al atzma yotza, el lelamad al klau kula yotza. So it teaches us that anything else that's in that category of avodas pnim is chayiv misa for doing it for avodah zarah. So therefore, that comes to include kitur and nisuch. Now, in addition, we also have ishtachava. That's a separate thing. The Torah mentions ishtachava as a separate thing of its own. And from that we learn that from that we learn that Hishtachava alone is Osir, and all of these four have this in common. They're all person is chayav for all of them, no matter which Avodah Zarah it was, whether it was the type that's worshipped in this way or whether not. Even you have an Avodah Zarah that is not normal to bow to it, or is not normal to shecht animals to it, or whatever, nevertheless he'd be chayav. These four things. And then in addition, we also have the Mishnah where he calls it his God, as opposed to, again, then you have, in addition, with every individual Avodah Zarah, there's the particular way that one is worshipped. And therefore, that one, even if it's not Avodah Pnim, he's also Chayev. But on the other hand, you have different other things of respect for the Avodah Zarah, which are not, if they're not the normal way of worshipping it, then he's not Chayev Misa for it, although there's still a lav involved. So, for example, all the ones we mentioned in the Mishnah about hugging and kissing and so forth.
But again, how do we know this?
So that's the thing. If it's the normal way, if we'd have to, that's why Beis Din has to be familiar with the different ways that different Avodah Zarahs are worshipped. So if they know that this particular Avodah Zarah, that people regularly worship it, that it's part of the rituals of that Avodah Zarah, is to hug it, then a person hugs it, he's Chayev Misa. But if they know, but if it's not the derech, then he would be potter. He would just have, he would just be over on a lav. He'd be chayv malchus for it. But the four that we mentioned, zibuach, kitur, nisach, ishtachaba, that he's going to be chayv misa for no matter what, whether it's the normal way of worshiping the avodah zara or whether or not, because we said three out of the four of them are avodas pnim. We learn from a binyan av from zeveach that Kitur and Nisuch are included as well, and Ishtachava is listed separately on its own, and each of them, the point is that each of those four applies whether it's Kedarka or not Kedarka. Okay, so having quoted this Braisa, then we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, and we'll analyze this Braisa in more detail and talk about these dinim of what exactly a person is chayev and potter for when it comes to Avodah Zarah.